Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
For many of us who factor nature and animals, forests and clean rivers into our concept of things that truly matter, last week's election turned our way. Americans made choices and chose to change direction, and we're all chirping about just how great it is. So, what now? We talk with someone who keeps working for change and speaks to the importance of choices. He's the National Conservation Director for the Sierra Club. It's coming up. Stay tuned. We've had a whole week to think about the election. Many of us are celebrating because it feels as if things kind of went in the direction of electing candidates who, well, what shall I say? They're Democrats. I mean, we can just start with that. There's many aspects to this, and I would like to really get some true expertise, and that's why we're talking with Bruce Hamilton, who is joining us now from San Francisco. He's the National Conservation Director for the Sierra Club. Bruce, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's quite a story. I'm going to let you tell us what you've been thinking about and the Sierra Club since the election last week.
Well, this was really a seismic shift in the political landscape. It is very infrequently that you have a change of control of the House of Representatives. True, it happened in 1994 when Newt Gingrich came in with the Contract with America, but you would have to reach back to the early 1950s to find another time when that happened. The shift in control of the Senate happens more frequently, but the House, it is a very rare occurrence. And to actually have both chambers shift over is even more monumental. But I would, at the same time, want to be talking about the shifts that have happened in state legislatures and locally, too, because this wasn't just a congressional seismic shift, but in fact the entire country was moving more in the direction of moderation and away from the radical right anti-environmental agenda that has been promoted for the last 8 years. And so this is really a, I think, wonderful opportunity for environmentalists and for other people that care about the fate of the earth to actually make some real progress, because we've basically been playing defense and heading off bad ideas, and in the meantime, you know, the fate of the planet is in danger, and it's time to actually turn this around and start making progress, because we don't have much time to do things like stop global warming.
Now, all of a sudden, there's kind of a new perspective on the environment, a new way of looking at the future, and it's extremely challenging because now we're supposed to really get out there and get something done. Let's start out with the effect from the change in the House specifically. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are saying, wow, Richard Pombo is gone. Talk about the effect that Richard Pombo had in charting a vision of America's future and what it means now that he's gone, because he was so active, as well as others, but he in particular seemed to be the person who really was, the in many respects, the forefront of this right-wing agenda.
Well, Richard Pombo was the chair of the House Resources Committee, and as a result, he basically controlled the agenda on most environmental matters outside the energy arena in the House of Representatives, which doesn't mean that the Pombo agenda was being adopted. I mean, the guy was so extreme and radical and out of the mainstream of American opinion that he was fairly ineffective even though he was a chairman. Yes, he managed to get his modification of the Endangered Species Act through the House of Representatives, but it stalled there. But his other initiatives, whether it was to sell off the national parks or open up the coast to new renewed oil and gas leasing or any of the other things he was promoting, by and large, didn't even pass the House, let alone get adopted into national law. It is great to have him gone, because now we have a situation where we can actually focus on the real issues and the real solutions rather than wasting time and having to just fight bad ideas coming from Richard Pombo over and over again, year after year after year, We have been losing time. We've been losing traction on the real issues of the day, like combating global warming and recovering endangered species and, you know, protecting our public lands and coming up with real solutions to our energy problem, which was the main environmental issue that was on voters' minds. I mean, basically, Richard Pombo wanted us to have more oil and gas and more coal and more destruction of our public lands and wedding us further to our fossil fuel addiction. And yet, his opponent, Jerry McNerney, was basically saying, no, there is a brighter, cleaner, smarter, cheaper, and more secure energy solution, and that's the way we need to be going, and that's what the voters in California 11 were saying. But frankly, that's what the voters all across the board were saying. If you look at the governor's races, if you look at the state legislative races, if you look at the congressional races, the main environmental issue that was out there was talking about energy security. But it wasn't talking about sending more troops into Iraq for energy security. It was talking about real energy security, which is coming up with sensible, new, clean, renewable resources at home.
It gives us the chance to have some moderated talk. I think when we're perpetually having to argue with these extreme ideas, it just changes the movement of the discussion. And I'm hoping that now a more reasonable and reasoned debate will be happening. And I think it's going to make it easier. What do you think is going to happen as a result of this shift? Where do you see some positives? Where do you see some challenges?
Well, I think moderation is really the watchword these days. I mean, you know, Nancy Pelosi, for all the vilification that the radical right and Karl Rove tried to do, you know, is not coming forward with a super leftist progressive agenda. She realizes that the people that were elected that put her in power as the presumptive Speaker of the House tend to be moderates. They tend to represent the mainstream. They tend to represent rural districts, and they got a bunch of rural votes, and they got those rural votes because people were looking for a course change, but they weren't looking for, you know, trying to adopt some radical leftist agenda. And so, you know, she's having to unify her party and come forward with common sense bipartisan solutions. George Bush, now having to eat so much crow, is saying he wants to be bipartisan. He wants to be a uniter and not a divider, which is interesting after 6 years of being the biggest divider in the country. But nevertheless, you know, it's welcome news. I mean, if he'll actually roll up his shirt sleeves and try to reach across the aisle and work with people, we could actually make some progress this next 2 years. On the other hand, if he wants to continue to appease the radical right and the extremists within his own party, then we're basically going to have 2 years of stalemate. But I think what you will see coming from Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi in the Congress are basically, you know, common sense solutions. You know, let's increase the efficiency standards for appliances. Let's try to remove the huge tax breaks we've got for the oil and gas industry, where they're basically reaping windfall profits at taxpayer expense, and let's instead start trying to figure out how to boost production of renewable resources here, whether it's agricultural fuels or, you know, solar energy or wind energy. Those kind of things are being ignored and underfunded at the same time we've been lavishing the subsidies on nuclear power and fossil fuels. And so those are the kind of changes I think are going to happen, and they're going to be welcome changes, and there's going to be Republicans that are supporting them as well as Democrats, and we're suddenly going to find that we can have consensus and we can move the country forward.
There's a group of new legislators now that will be, they're actually in D.C. now as we speak, and they're going through their training and getting ready to seize the reins of power and move forward. Any of the new legislators who you are particularly interested in or who capture your attention?
Well, all across the board. I would start, you know, here in California with Jerry McNerney, who defeated Richard Pombo in California 11. It was really the only turnover we had in a congressional seat here in California, but it was a monumental turnover because you have in Pombo somebody who I said was wedded to fossil fuels and opening up the Arctic Wildlife Refuge and opening up the California coast to drilling, and he's being replaced by somebody who says, you know, I'm a wind power entrepreneur and I want to try to figure out how to wean this country from fossil fuels and move in the direction of renewable energy, create, you know, a real industry for that in my district and in California so that we can be leaders of the country. You know, so that's one example. But if you look across the board in the new people that were elected, they generally all had the same agenda, which was, you know, let's stop trying to defend American interests in Iraq and think that the only solution to solving our energy problems is to send troops to the Middle East, and instead let's try to figure out how to get some homegrown energy solutions that provide for the long haul.
You champion the move that unites the national with the state and local. Talk about how you see the results of the election playing on the ground in the state level.
Well, I still think that is the most favorable forum for making progress right now, because unfortunately, even though there has been a slight shift in Congress, I mean, yes, the Democrats took over control, but control in the Senate means 51-49 vote. And you basically need at least 60 votes in the Senate in order to rule, in order to really get your way because of the filibuster rules that they have there. So, you know, we're a long way from being able to move forward a progressive agenda, especially when we have George Bush still sitting in the White House and unwilling to sign bills that will actually move this country forward in the direction that it needs to go, which is a very dramatic shift from the way that he's been leading us the last 6 years. So with that in mind, we continue to need to invest at the state level, because we can't just wait for a greener Congress and a greener president to come forward. But there's tremendous progress that can be made and has to be made at the state level. California is leading the way. This last session, we passed AB 32, which is the most progressive piece of global warming legislation in the country. You know, we passed the Million Solar Roofs Initiative. There's lots of good stuff happening in this state, and we're busy trying to export those ideas to other states. So when California passes clean car legislation, the so-called Pavley Law, we didn't just stop there and say, well, California has it, but we then took it and had it adopted in Oregon, in Washington, in New Mexico, in Arizona, the entire New England states, you know, all across the country. And now we have a third of the North American auto market saying, we want to have the same kind of clean car standards that California is promoting, which will not only give us cleaner cars, but will also combat global warming. Now, once you have that, you know, Detroit is then going to be forced to make cleaner fleets for the entire country. So you don't have to wait for Congress in order to make progress if you can get enough progress made state by state by state. When George Bush refused to clamp down on mercury pollution coming from coal-fired power plants, we basically went to the states, and one by one by one, and we've now got 15 different states, have adopted tougher standards than George Bush's, saying we aren't going to stand to have our citizens poisoned by mercury, we're going to adopt a tougher standard. The interesting thing is that these people that claim they're all in favor of states' rights that are all over the Bush administration hate it when the states adopt anything that's tougher than the weak federal standard that they've put in place in order to appease industry. And so this will be the big challenge, because right now, as we've got states leading the way, we've got the Bush administration and industry challenging the states in the courts, saying you can't be allowed in order to pass a tougher standard than the federal standard.
That is the conflict about national control and local control, and it comes in many colors and shapes. Let's also move this out into the big picture, because quite honestly, nothing has changed except our hope and our potential, hopefully, to make change and to have real discussions and deal with problems. But the problems, as we move day to day, month to month, year to year, just seem to be mounting. For example, global warming is achieving critical mass in terms of its acceptance around the world. People are out as well talking about mass extinction and the destruction of coral reefs throughout the oceans, and as well now a recent study that says that, for example, fish species may be essentially gone from the oceans by, and this is a shocking reality, I'm going to be talking with someone from Scripps who was part of the study, by 2048. Mm-hmm. Those are extraordinary challenges, and so although the politics have changed, the challenges haven't changed. All that's happened is that we can now perhaps talk about them. How are we going to start to utilize both our national and our local, this change in the power structure and the vision to address such absolutely devastating prospects for the future?
Well, first we have to get out of a state of denial, which is where the Bush administration and the radical right congressional leadership has been for the last 6 years. When we had a chair of the Senate Environment Committee, James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who thought that global warming was a hoax. and that it wasn't real and that there was no reason to do anything. And we needed to just continue to study it in perpetuity. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking. The top scientists in this country and in the world say we have 10 years to turn this around. And if we don't, the carbon that we will introduce into the atmosphere over the next 10 years will be up there for the next 100 years. And it will basically make it impossible to reverse the catastrophic effects of global warming. Heavy sea level rises, massive drought, massive flooding, dramatic climate collapse. And so we have 10 years to turn that around. And that's not 10 years when we can be sitting, debating, and studying, which is what the Bush administration and Senator Inhofe wanted to do. Well, now we have a situation where California Senator Barbara Boxer is very likely to be the next chair of the Senate Environment Committee. And she believes that the time to act is now. She wants to take the California AB 32 legislation on global warming and introduce it and ultimately pass it in the Senate so that we have that as our new federal policy. Now, that isn't going to be passed in the next 2 years and signed by George Bush, but if she can get it introduced, start lining up sponsors, have those hearings, educate the Congress and educate the American people and use the bully pulpit of that chairmanship in order to do that, then post-2008, we potentially can pass that kind of legislation. And at the same time, if we're taking AB 32 and trying to pass it in numerous state legislatures across the country, that will build momentum and put pressure on those state congressional delegations to end up supporting a Boxer bill at the federal level. So those are the kind of things that we need to do. We've got to dramatically change. I mean, here we have, you know, the next big climate summit happening right now in Nairobi, Kenya. The rest of the world is basically saying we've got to address global warming now, and if we don't, we are going to have massive drought, massive starvation, massive migration. Entire countries will disappear with rising sea level. And yet, the Bush administration is still saying we don't want to have any mandatory controls because we're worried about our economy and what it will do. Well, frankly, the rest of the world believes that the future of the economy is in investing in clean energy solutions and addressing this issue, and the country that gets to the front of the line and starts developing the technology and marketing the technology to the rest of the world about how to solve global warming is going to be the leader of the future. And we are basically ignoring that chance to assert leadership and instead are becoming the biggest naysayers on the planet. We produce the most pollution, we're the biggest contributor to global warming, and we're also the biggest outlaw because we're the only major industrialized nation in the world that doesn't recognize this as a problem and has refused to sign the Kyoto Protocol.
So the hope, of course, is that this change is going to, as I say, change the dialogue such that it can start to change the attitude and the awareness of the public at large, because that is what really matters. People must be aware. People on the street, people in the fields and the back country all have to become conscious of the fact that we must act now. So in that regard, I'd like to give you this chance to literally address your membership in the Sierra Club and tell them what they need to be thinking about in the year, let's say the next year and two. I'd certainly welcome anyone else hearing that message to participate and join in your effort.
Well, first let me say that the issue of global warming is not strictly an environmental issue. And if it is only environmentalists talking to environmentalists and mobilizing environmentalists, we will fail. This needs to be recognized, as Al Gore says, as the moral challenge of our time. And whether you are a hunter, an angler, a farmer, a steel worker, you know, whatever your line of work, you have a stake in global warming. We are going to have a situation in this country where everybody needs to recognize that the future of the planet, the future of our economy, the future of everybody's line of work is at stake if global warming isn't corrected within the next decade. And so as a result, my message to Sierra Club people is stop talking to Sierra Club people and start talking to the people in your congregation on Sunday. Go talk to your neighbor, whether they're a Sierra Club member or not. You know, go talk to, you know, the local union hall. You know, go talk to, you know, everybody that you can reach out to in as many possible ways as you can. Because if everybody doesn't start addressing this and everybody take it responsibly, and everybody take it seriously, and everybody realize that there will be some changes that are necessary, but these are going to be changes for the good, then we're all going to fail. This needs to be a collective exercise. And yes, we still want to work to protect national parks and wilderness areas and endangered species and all those things, but all those will be lost if we don't address climate change. You can draw a circle around redwoods or sequoias and say we've got a new national park or we've got a new national monument or a new state park, but those trees will die if climate change occurs as it's being projected to happen. Similarly, you can establish critical habitat for, you know, some endangered species, but that species will die if climate change happens. They just can't migrate that fast in order to adapt. So, you know, regardless of what you care about, you know, as a conservationist or as an environmentalist, whether you like to hunt, fish, bird watch, or whatever, it's all at risk with global warming. And as a result, I urge everybody to get involved in this campaign and encourage everybody else in society to get involved in this and demand change in this country. We have to get our local governments, we have to get our college campuses, we've got to get our state government, we've got to get the federal government, all responsibly addressing this and recognizing that it's not somebody else's problem, but it's our problem. Every choice we make every day, you know, can help deal with this, but it's not just a matter of personal choice. You know, yes, you can get a more fuel-efficient car, yes, you can insulate your house, but at the same time, if we don't also hold corporations and local governments, everybody else in society accountable for their decisions and their choices and give them better choices and better solutions, then we're all going to fail collectively.
Bruce Hamilton with the Sierra Club. If people want to turn to the Sierra Club to learn a lot more about these issues, what's the best way for them to find you?
Well, if you go up on the World Wide Web and just type in SierraClub.org, you will find our website, and that will put you in touch with your local chapter, or it'll put you in touch with our national offices. And we'd be delighted to hear from you. We'd be delighted to have you join us, and we'd be delighted to partner with you if you're another organization and want to work with us on these common problems.
Bruce Hamilton, National Conservation Director with the Sierra Club, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
If only we had a map that we could all agree on and then decide where we are and where we want to go. We've done that 1,000 times on our hikes, adventures, and misadventures. Mapping Our World is coming up when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child within my heart rise above? Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.